This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. Going to do a Michigan football mailbag. We'll see how it goes. The questions were... They were varied, a lot of different types of fans, and that's kind of the theme of this offseason, is everyone interpreted last season differently and had their own different opinions on the coaches. So anyway, we might be combining some questions, we might be kind of paraphrasing some questions, but going to talk everything from Jim Harbaugh to the quarterback battle to the defensive front to kind of the state of the program. We could go down that rabbit hole for like 5 hours at a time. So we probably won't go too far into that, but answering a lot of the questions that you had, I guess we should start. Well, let's start with a discussion Steve and I had not recorded yesterday. Talking about the front seven. So obviously the news, if you missed it last night, Jay Toya, a USC defensive tackle transfer, top 200 recruit in the 2021 cycle. So he enrolled at USC, attended classes, did spring practice, seemed to be trending actually toward a first or second string role. He entered the portal, bit of a surprise, and he cited the desire to kind of, he committed to USC as a true freshman, couldn't do any visits last year as part of the recruiting cycle, or the dead period, I should say. And so he visited UCLA. He's from the LA area, and then visited Michigan, and then last night committed to UCLA. I don't think it was a Michigan screwed it up. I mean, they were one of two schools that he was considering, and it seemed like he had a pretty glowing visit to Michigan. So I don't think we'll ever hear the full story on it, but he's going to stay home, go to the Bruins. And Steve, we don't have to talk about too much about his recruitment. I mean, two weeks ago, he wasn't on anybody's radar. So, I mean, this is just kind of the way things go in the transfer portal these days. But how the bigger picture question is, Michigan was very interested in Toya. They remain, I guess, engaged in the transfer portal, looking for, I would assume, linebackers. We haven't actually officially heard any offers lately at linebacker, but linebackers and defensive tackles. And so the big question is, how dire is Michigan's defensive front? I think anyone who has ever watched Michigan football knows that the good Michigan football teams have good defensive fronts. Very rarely has Michigan been an offensive driven team that didn't have, you know, some pass rushers, some run stoppers in the middle. And so I look at this team, I see one elite player in Aiden Hutchinson in the defensive front. I see two players that I am pretty confident will be solid in Michael Barrett and Christopher Hinton. I see a couple higher ceiling type players. Higher ceiling in terms of freshmen, you know, looking at a Junior Colson, looking at a David Ajabo. I know he's not a freshman, but, you know, a couple guys who I think could really pop. And then the rest is really, you know, kind of wild cards. And I think some have lower floors, some have lower ceilings. But it just seems like this is a group. When I look around the Big Ten, I think Michigan might be in trouble with its defensive front, and the new defensive coaches, Sean Newell remains, but, you know, the other defensive coaches, I think there's a lot of work to be done. You know, some of it is they're transitioning from a 4-3 to a 3-4. You know, they're moving some of those defensive ends to an outside linebacker edge role. They're beefing up, trying to beef up their defensive front or their defensive line. And then linebacker, they're kind of dealing with a situation where they have a lot of Viper holdovers. Some have entered the transfer portal, but they have Viper holdovers. They have, linebackers that maybe don't have the speed that Michigan is hoping for from guys who are supposed to, their roles are supposed to be go sideline to sideline. So Steven, your estimation, you know, obviously you can, Toya seemed like someone who's really going to help at that nose position. I think you and I both would agree he would have started for Michigan. So in your mind, how dire is this defensive front? How much trouble are the Wolverines in at the front?
So, you know, we were at Ferris State last week for the Ferris State, the mega camp. There was a 70 coaching staffs across the country on campus for this thing. Obviously, I think Michigan's entire staff was at this camp. The majority of them stayed for the entirety of it. See, you hear things, you know, throughout the entirety of the day. Biggest thing for me, the sense I get, I think defensively right now, I think Michigan new staff, I think the feeling is the starting 11 that they think they can put on the field, I feel like they think they can have some pretty solid success. I think the problem is depth-wise is where the issue is, particularly at the linebacker position and on the interior, which, yeah, the Jay Toya thing, you know, just it does feels like a kind of another punch in the gut for Michigan fans. You get this guy who was a top target in 2021, committed to USC a long, long time ago, but Michigan continued to pursue for a while and was one of the top guys on their board, just kind of magically appears in the portal and wants to visit Michigan. I know his camp gave Michigan some really strong vibes that he was feeling it. And obviously, like you said, and I think this is a case, is I think he would have probably started, and then to go to UCLA is just kind of one of those, like, yeah, like 2 weeks ago, nobody would have even been talking about him. And then he visits, it kind of looks like Michigan for a little bit, and then he commits to UCLA. Would have been a game changer for Michigan, in my opinion. Would have been, like I said, a starting caliber player, but also just another body there too. Biggest thing for me was front seven. I think they really need to retool pretty much across. We talked a lot about edge. Feels like a spot that seems deep because a lot of the DNs that they had in Don Brown's scheme have been kind of pushed out to that spot. You talk about guys like Mike Morris, Gabe Newberg, you mentioned Ojabo, Jalen Harrell.
Taylor Upshaw's in that Upshaw, mix,
yep,
too.
Absolutely, Upshaw. That's a position it feels like they're pretty deep at. The actual linebacker spots, like I said, that's where I get the biggest sense. I feel like they think they can succeed with the guys that we project to start. And maybe even your third, fourth guy, whoever those might be. Got to think Hill Green, probably one of those two names for sure. Maybe Mullings is, you know, you talk about the top four there. But the depth there is something I think they're really going to work to fix. Probably, you know, it's a recruiting thing. But also, I still think if the right portal guy dropped at linebacker, I think they'd take a strong look there. So that's, yeah, I mean, basically the gist of it was this. Don Brown has recruited, the last few cycles, has recruited guys that were either sort of bigger and like not as fast or like smaller, undersized guys who are really fast. I think the consent, like the new staff, McDonald, Hilo, guys like that, I think the biggest thing they're looking for are big athletes. And of course you want to get the top ones if you can get them. They'll host one of them. Jeremy Patton out of Texas will be on campus this weekend, kind of fits that mold. But I think they also feel like you do have the portal. So from a recruiting standpoint, I think you're going to see guys that might be a little more raw from like a technical standpoint, but that are like uber athletes, guys that they feel like they can coach and turn into. And again, no, if the five-star wants to play and he's technically advanced and he's big and fast, they're going to take him. But if they don't hit on their top guys, I think what you'll see is more big and fast. Colson was kind of that guy, though, for Don Brown. This last cycle, Colson was a guy like that for Don Brown. Michigan wants to recruit more junior Colsons. I don't know if every one that they will recruit will be a top 150 level guy, but it's going to be more in that mold, you know. So that's the biggest defensive takeaway I kind of had. Like I said, I think I'd let you know about that like last week, but I was hearing some stuff along those lines. And they've had, what, five linebackers enter the portal in the last like 9 or 10 months.
So. Yep. Well, and in that same time, or I guess if you stretch it to 15 months, they've had, what, five linebackers drafted.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah, it's part of natural attrition, but you're right that they were recruiting guys that ultimately just weren't making it onto the field. I mean, if you go look at Michigan's transfer portal on 24/7 Sports right now, it's a whole bunch of linebackers who hit the portal who, and I don't mean this to insult them, but like they never did anything in games.
Right.
For the Wolverines.
And what was, you know, and a few of them, particularly ones that have transferred recently, were never even, didn't even get to the point where they would be competing. They were still in the infant stages of their Michigan career. You talk about guys like Osmond Savage, Cornell Wheeler, even Mohan, who we'd heard good things about in Don Brown's defense, but was a guy I think we had focused on right away as like, this was a total Don Brown Viper who might not be a fit scheme-wise for what McDonald was going to be looking to do. So, yeah, I mean, that's the way I'd look at it. You know, Michigan, I think they're more so than a lot of teams that are trying to compete. They're an injury or two away from things being very dire, especially at the linebacker position. I mean, that's probably the best way to put it. And on the interior, because right now we've seen Chris Hinton. He's shown it in flashes. I think they want to see more consistency there. We haven't seen Mozzie Smith as much. We've heard kind of seems to depend on the day where that is at. But there's a lot of pressure on those guys to produce. You know, Donovan Jeter's in what, year five or six? I mean, kind of, I think he'll be a little bit better than he was last year, but I don't know how much more of a ceiling you're going to get with a guy in his fifth year in the program. He does bring the experience factor, played a lot last year, but I don't know if you're going to see like a huge leap or anything like that. So, you know, another spot, and you add Jordan Whitley, which definitely a situational player. We'll see how that one bears out. Again, somebody I think Michigan, yeah, like I said, a scenario based guy. I'm not sure he's definitely not, in my opinion, a game changer for them defensively, but does fill a need for something that they've been looking for, you know? So, but again, another spot where an injury or two and they're going to be scrambling big time. I mean, that's why you see a guy like Toya enter, and that's what Michigan immediately jumped on him. More so than any other, more so than Whitley. I mean, Toya would have been the top. If everybody had entered the portal at the same time, let's say, Toya would have been far and away the top target for Michigan. So that's where it kind of stinks. To feel like you're in a good spot for him and then not get him. But yeah, I think the depth question at linebacker interior line are really the two biggest question marks Michigan is facing this 2021 football season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, there's a ton of questions, right? But in terms of like the ones that are in bold red letters, you know, I think the depth and then I do think the star presence. You don't need stars to be a good defense, but it sure does help. I mean, if you look at Michigan's defenses for the last decade, it seems like every year they've had 3-4 guys in their front seven who were, if they didn't make first team all Big Ten, they were pretty close. You know, they were maybe a second team, but with great stats or you know, they had some key moments. I think there's Aiden Hutchinson. Steve, you're welcome to feel differently. I don't think anyone else in the defensive front, I could confidently say, will be a first, second, or third team All Big Ten player, you know, heading into the season. So I think it's very dire. I think there's potential. I think it will be very interesting to see. I think there's a lot of guys who are kind of entering that now or never type of season. Some are literally entering their last season. So I guess in that sense, it's also now or never. But like, you know, I think about someone like Ojabo entering his third season. He was always meant to be a year two, year three guy. Well, this is where he shows it, or he doesn't. You know,
Uche plan.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Guys who came in really raw. You know, I would argue Upshaw, despite, you know, his genetics, was in a similar boat. I would argue, Mike Morris, if I'm not mistaken, was in a somewhat similar boat. I mean, there's a few players who have really good size, pretty good athletic profiles, and now they have to do something with it. And I don't mean that in like a do something, get out, but like, this is probably the year that Michigan, I mean, if there's ever been a year Michigan needs someone to step up and be an outlier in the defensive front, it's this year. And I think they have a lot of guys who can fill roles along the defensive line and an edge. And I'm with you, Steve. I think linebacker, I mean, I don't even know who their number six linebacker would be right now. I did a depth chart and I was kind of listing everyone under scholarship at linebacker and they're too deep. And so it's kind of, at some point, you know, I'm very curious to see how Michigan approaches the transfer portal, because you mentioned if the right guy pops in, at some point you need numbers too. You know, even if it's a guy who isn't starting and maybe isn't contending to start, but I guess we'll have to see, because you're right. The amount of players that they have lost versus the amount of linebackers they have brought in, it's quite a disparity. And especially for theoretically, I mean, I know the edge position is going to be kind of defensive end, but for theoretically needing another inside caliber linebacker instead of a Viper, it's going to be really interesting. Anthony Solomon's maybe another guy who's kind of quote on the spot to step up this season after what the coaches really liked him, you know, year one and year two, but you know, he's a little undersized to be an inside linebacker, but this is, if he wants to make an imprint, I think this would be the year to do it. Maybe they can get creative with some of these, you know, the 2-5, what's the math? The 2-5-4 type defense. Maybe they can get interesting if players step up. But anyway, yeah, I think it would be described, and it might have actually literally been described to you as an extreme makeover, you know, what they're kind of doing to this defensive front. And so that's going to be a very pivotal off season of, you know, strength training and guys kind of changing their bodies and trying to make something of a defensive front that really struggled last season. I think it went under discussed because they went 2-4. They averaged 1.5 sacks per game last year. I mean, that's just really bad. Like you're not gonna win a lot of. I mean, there are players who average more sacks per game than that.
Right. Yeah. It opens up a whole wealth of questions, which maybe we can use this to segue into some of the mailbag questions. Is if they are revamping the defense, what kind of timeline does that buy everybody?
Yeah, right. No, and we got a couple questions about that. Actually, two former callers into the radio show, Shane Majewski, he seemed to imply that maybe there's a 3-year timeline, whereas Bradley U of M said, what happens if they go 3-9? And so, I mean, he was kind of tongue in cheek about it, but we can't,
you sure? Shouldn't,
we're not going to talk about. Well, he said he threw an LOL in there, but we're not going to talk about candidates today. It's June. That said, I think it is fair to talk about the leash, because I think the off-season restructuring, I think it can be interpreted in one of two ways. And Steve, you and I both interpret it in this way, and that I think Michigan set themselves up where if this season isn't a step forward, 8 wins, 9 wins, who knows, 10. We'll start with 8 in terms of projections, but isn't like a return to kind of the consistent winning program. I think Michigan set themselves up to move on. and do so in a financially sensible way. It actually, because of the restructuring of the deal, it would theoretically be cheaper to pay Harbaugh for this season of work, pay the buyout, and move on than it would have been to have paid him for the duration of his contracts that he was on previously. I don't know if that makes sense over podcast, but the salary and the buyout were reduced so much that literally paying him for this season and then paying him to go away would be cheaper than it previously was to pay him for this season. So Shane, I see where you're coming from interpreting it as a, you know, this kind of extends his leash a little bit. I actually think it shortens the leash a little bit. And so a question I get a lot, Steve, you know, if I'm out at bars or talking to Michigan fans or whatever, I get asked a lot, what would it take for Michigan to move on from Jim Harbaugh record wise? Honestly, I think it's 7-5. You know, I don't think Michigan feels like they need to endure a multi-year rebuild. And I think that's a fair thing to say. I mean, this is a team that Jim Harbaugh assembled. You know, it's not like he isn't a part of the recruiting process or isn't a part of the talent development process. I mean, this is the team he has. And I don't think there is any, you can't justify not being a top 25 team when you recruit at a top 20 level every single year. And so, I mean, you know, team talent composite, I think last year they were 18th, which is lower than they had been previously. So I think there's reason to believe it could have been a down year, not 2-4. I mean, what's the excuse to losing to Michigan State? What's the excuse to Indiana, who does not recruit at Michigan's level, completely passing you and looking like a superior program? And so I you know, Shane asked about kind of a 3-year leash. I don't think it's that. I think it's a 1-year leash. I don't think that they're going to say you have to beat Ohio State, you have to win the Big Ten title, you have to make a New Year's Six bowl. But I do think Michigan has to be a winning team this year. I think they have to be a top 25 team, or else, I mean, you know, it does take a good coach to be good at Michigan. I don't think Michigan's an automatic top 25 team in today's college football, but you can hire somebody for the price you're paying, or you've paid Jim Harbaugh. You can hire somebody to win you 8-9 games a year. And so if Jim can't even do that, I do think Michigan moves on. Steve, your thoughts on the leash and then kind of the interpretation of that contract restructuring? Because some people interpret it as, oh, they're giving him 3 or 4 more years. Technically, yes, they are by extending his contract, but I felt like the changes in the numbers was a sign to me that this is a do it now or we'll find someone else to do it.
The only thing that kind of keeps me from believing your last point is just the amount of overhaul they did on the staff. If they had gotten rid of a couple guys, but kept the majority of things the same, I feel like I would look at it as more of a do or die type situation. Particularly also, you know, they've revamped the recruiting staff finally too. Something they should have done a long time ago. They've done that now. Feels a little more modern at this point. And you know, it's like you look at the roster, you look at what they want to do defensively. We keep, because the offensive staff, relatively similar. You know, you look at what they're trying to do defensively. It's like it's putting a lot of pressure on this new defensive staff to maybe make something out of something that isn't there in 1 year. Now, could it be, I guess this is kind of what happened to Brady Hoke, was always like a 1 year, like after he left Michigan was like, what is he, 1 year at Oregon and they all got fired. And then Tennessee was the same thing, you know? So maybe that's the mission. It depends on if Manuel and Michigan's patience is the same. At the same time though. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a limit. You can't have a repeat of last year, but I think it's, I, Yeah, there's no, I don't think there's like a baseline, right? Because if say they went seven, let's just theoretically, let's say they went 7-5, but they beat Ohio State, like they upset Ohio State, then what do you do, right? So there's always like a lot of different scenarios within that. I just think the answer is always somewhere in the middle. I think financially, where's Jim at now on the list? Like 35th or 40th in the country in coaching salary or something? Wasn't it way, yeah, way low, right?
Yep.
I don't know how you look at it as far as, do you look at that as a bargain? Because I think for the full body of work, the fact that they're only paying him that much money, that's a bargain for Michigan if he produces at the level that they have under him. What it really comes down to is if last year was an outlier or if it's a trend of things to come. Not saying 3-9, 4-8, 5-7, but just they just disappoint and don't look good. You know, even if they,
yeah, they're a middling program.
Exactly. Yeah. So obviously there's a lot of nuance in that situation, but 3 years, you know, 3 years is a deal where it's like, I don't think to have a rebuild in the middle of a one coaching tenure is kind of a weird, you know, usually rebuild at a college program means the head coach is gone and there's a whole new staff.
Yeah. It's operation. A reset. Yeah. Not a rebuild.
Yeah. So it's rare. It's kind of Michigan in rare territory because this almost is kind of feels like a rebuild, especially defensively, but you know, I don't know. I think the answer is somewhere in the middle as it always is. I think there are baselines, I suspect, but for this to be a 3-year thing for sure, I think it can't be. I think it's, I guess I maybe the best way to put it. I think I'm feeling like this is more of a 2-year type deal. I think barring a collapse from them this season, that's the only way that this isn't a 2-year deal. If they go, I think 8-4, competitive in the big games, sneak one out against a team they're maybe not supposed to beat this season. I think that's good enough to say, hey, we're on our way. We know, you know, this is, we're rebuilding the defense. The offense showed some life. We finally have a quarterback who's starting multi-years, like et cetera, et cetera. You know, because there are signs, but it's going to have to be more than what we've seen, I guess.
Yeah, I interpret the overhaul. I mean, D'Antonio did it, and I believe the next season was his last season. You know, Brian Kelly did it at Notre Dame, and it worked out extremely well. He was kind of he's kind of like the best case scenario where they went, I believe it was 4-8. They changed a bunch of the assistant coaches, ended a lot of long-term employments. And then I, if I'm not mistaken, they went 10-3 the next year, made the playoff the year after that, 10-3, then made the playoff. So they, it kind of worked out for them. But I think a lot of times those coordinator hires in the hot seat season, you know, that's kind of a shot in the dark. And I'm not saying anything of Michigan's hires. In fact, in a moment, I'm going to say that they made some pretty strong hires this off season, but yeah, it'll be interesting. You bring up a good point about the 2-year window, because they did recruit a 5-star running back and a 5-star quarterback. I believe that is the first time Michigan has done that, at least since 24/7 Sports was around. They came close a couple times, but I don't think they've ever actually had 5 stars of both. You know, they're still recruiting. Even with all the I guess negativity around the program at a top 10, top 15 level. So we'll see. I think my argument is that 8 wins is probably too easy to get for Michigan to, I guess, just ignore a 6-6 season.
Right.
Administratively. I mean,
8-4 with losses to Penn State, Wisconsin, Ohio State, right? Like one of those types of seasons.
Yeah. Like I think if they went 6-6, I think that means you're losing to like Nebraska or Maryland or Michigan State. I mean, they play enough teams that they should be beating to where, yeah, I mean, if they're going to rebuild, if they're going to have to like hit the reset button, you probably have to change your head coach. That's kind of how college football works, because it's very hard to recruit. If you have you can't tank in college football. If you have a bad season, recruits notice and they say, I don't want to go there. It looks like they're 2 or 3 years away from contending, you know, speaking generously. So, and that's where you find a new head coach who can promise optimism and it's a new start and I'm going to do things differently. So yeah, I mean, there's really no like designed tanking or designed rebuilding in college sports, especially at a program like Michigan. I think sometimes Michigan fans' expectations are too high, but I think it's absolutely fair for them to expect 8 wins. You know, with how they recruit, the facilities that they provide, you know, the financial backing of the program. I think it's very fair. Real quick, just to maybe add a more specific question. Jeff 6673 asked about some of the hires, and he seems to read it as grasping at straws. I actually think the hires that they made this offseason were by and large very strong hires. I mean, I think Mike McDonald seems like a very strong impression. I mean, the only thing he doesn't have is like college defensive coordinator experience, but you can tell in interviews he's really sharp. It sounds the word on the street is that, or not the word on the street, but the word, you know, from the program is that players are really responding to him and kind of, you know, his intellectual approach, to fundamentals, to scheme, to game planning, everything like that. The Mike Hart hire makes way too much sense. You know, I would argue the Ron Bellamy hire makes a ton of sense too, especially if you add in the recruiting component. The Clean Scale hire makes a ton of sense. I mean, these were hires that people were asking for like 2 years ago. And so I'm curious about the grasping at straws. I think some of the, like the shuffling, you know, Sharon Moore to offensive line, Jay Harbaugh moving away from running backs back to a position he was already coaching before. I can see where fans are kind of maybe rolling their eyes a little bit, saying, okay, they're just kind of bringing in a couple guys, just moving people around. You know, a couple of the hires were very young, relatively inexperienced coaches. But I think if you look at the actual full picture of the offseason changes, I feel like, one, they changed everything they needed to change. And then two, I think that they were pretty measured in their quote unquote swing hires. I mean, they were guys that there's a lot of logical sense. There wasn't one that I was completely scratching my head on. There were a couple that I had to do a little research and say, okay, why did they pick this guy over this guy? But it does seem like they made, it didn't feel like a straw grasping off season. It certainly, I get where Michigan fans are. You know, I think there was another question we got about, like, is this the most depressing preseason ever? For the fans, I can see where that is the case. I mean, there's very little proof. There's very little actually in front of you that you can genuinely be excited about. But in terms of Michigan's personnel changes, I thought they did a pretty good job. B plus, A minus type of job, maybe, you know, with a ceiling too, you know, where a chance that some of these hires could work out even better than we expected, but it certainly feels like I don't agree with the grasping at straws. I think a lot of necessary changes were made. And then there's a couple that are very intriguing, because, you know, they could be getting guys who before, they become huge names, which is generally tends to be better than getting a guy after they become a huge name in terms of, you know, bringing a fresh playbook, fresh game plan, fresh scheme and everything.
Yeah, I agree. Grasping at straws, like, yeah, like you said, I know where they're going with the question, you know, is this too little too late sort of deal, I think is probably what they're getting at. Because I agree with you. I think by and large, I think the changes in the hires that they made were very positive. I believe I look at the Hart and Bellamy hires not just as being benefit, like Hart in particular, you know, in the locker room, right? As something that could be very beneficial. Anybody watch Michigan football from 2004, 2008 knows, you know, how much Mike Hart loves the program and how fired, like he's a very fired up kind of guy. And so I think bringing more of that into the locker room, I think is a huge plus, especially when you feel like how they look, even just how they looked on the field last year, not just how they played, but just the general just vibe in watching them live was just a very mundane, lax, you know. I see guys like Hart and Bellamy, and I still think Harbaugh is that way. I don't know where that lax came from last season, but I think having more of that from guys who have been there and played there and done it, I think is a big positive. And then, yeah, I like both of the hires they brought. You know, the Matt Weiss hire hasn't really gotten talked about a lot. I think that's one of the more high ceiling hires that they ended up making. And I don't think it's a coincidence that when John Marie left, that Harbaugh, you know, I think everyone naturally thought, well, they're going to replace a linebackers coach with another linebackers coach. I think the fact they shifted Bellamy back over to safety and moved Hilo from safeties to linebackers to bring Weiss in, I think was a clear indication, not necessarily that they had to make another move on the offensive side of the, or they had to make some kind of move on the offensive side of the ball. But I think that this was a guy that was too good, knowing they had the opportunity, was too good to pass up as far as being an addition to the staff. So that'll be an interesting dynamic with Gattis and Weiss.
That is
right.
Objectively though, the closest to a head scratching decision. I mean, he had not coached quarterbacks, you know, in the NFL. There was some shuffling and, you know, moving Bellamy from receivers to safeties, even though he's coached all the positions as a high school coach. I think if there was one where I can see where Michigan fans are kind of like, what is going on here? That's probably the move.
Okay. So here's my thing. I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. I think spots like safety, that's where Michigan put Chris Partridge, if you remember. Safety, there are a couple spots where I think, like, you have a guy like Klinkscale, would have been linguist before, but I think it's the same idea. Is, you know, Klinkscale was brought in, his title is defensive backs coach. I think you have a combo of an uber experienced high level coach like Klinkscale, but again, would have been the same with Mo Linguist. You put a young guy like Bellamy on that side of the ball. Like, I think that works out okay. I don't think the concern so much is, I don't look so much at the shuffling necessarily as being like a positive or a negative. I think the combo, you put a guy like Klinkscale with a guy like Bellamy, I think that can work totally fine. It worked with Zordich and Partridge, even though Partridge really had not had any experience coaching safeties at the time. I mean, he was a linebacker coach by trade coming up the ranks well before he got to Michigan. I think he played linebacker. You know, so I we heard a lot of good things about Weiss after the fact. I mean, he was a guy that was garnering buzz as a potential NFL offensive coordinator. I know when he got hired, one of the first articles I found about him was, I believe it was a Pittsburgh Steelers, I don't remember what network or whatever, but was absolutely explicitly mentioned as a guy that they thought should be garnering interest as a potential offensive coordinator for them. That was my thought. He's a big analytics guy too. I know that was the other big thing with him. So I'm not as, to me, that was not as big a head scratcher maybe at the time, I guess.
You can't say
hold on, hold on, hold on. It was, It was out of left. Of course, it was out of left field. What if you let me finish here? Because yes, John Murray leaves. You think, okay, you're going to replace a defensive coach with another defensive coach. Obviously, the way it played out was unexpected. You didn't think they were going to get a quarterbacks coach, OC type guy was not going to be the replacement there. I think looking back, though, I think you can see where Harbaugh it was going with that direction, because you can, there are assistants on staff. So the right way to say it, like, it's primarily recruiting driven. Like Vince Merrill, if you look at Vince Merrill at Kentucky as the tight ends coach, I don't even know if Kentucky like has produced one tight end, but he's one of the best recruiters in the country. You got to have him on your staff. It's like, I think there are guys that can learn the ropes. Their strength will be recruiting. You can kind of throw them anywhere. And then you understand where I'm going with this? So of course the way that it actually played out was
I get that part, but we're talking in literally this exact same episode how dire things are at linebacker. And I know Mike McDonald has coached linebackers, but he's got a lot on his plate.
It's the same as Don Brown, is that he will basically be coaching the linebacker, same way that Don Brown did. So, you know, Don Brown was defensive coordinator, but was also pretty much linebacker's coach.
Didn't really work for Don Brown.
Well, they got five drafted. It did for a while. It is the recruiting where things went, where it looks like things have gone south. I mean, they produced a lot of good linebackers. It's just, like I said, the recruiting has been head scratching they've hit on a couple, but it's been head scratching the last like three cycles or so, pretty much since Devin Bush departed. And McGrone, but even then McGrone, we still think got drafted mostly off potential and not off actual production at Michigan. Yeah. McDonald and Hilo have experience work. Like they know each other really, really well. I think that's where I think that's partially why they felt comfortable to make that move. I think you put Bellamy with, again, either Linguist or Clakesdale, whoever it was going to be. I think that works also. And I feel like they saw another opportunity to bring in what Harbaugh. I guess I look at it this way, is the same idea as drafting the best player available, right? I'm not saying that that's how it's going to work out. I'm arguing that's how Harbaugh must have been looking at it, is when they got wind or caught word that Weiss was available, or a guy that John Harbaugh was willing, because there has to be some kind of discussion there where it's like, yeah, you can have him, or, like we'll let him go or whatever. That's the way I kind of look at it, is that Michigan and Harbaugh must have viewed Weiss as sort of a best player available type scenario, and then shuffled things in a way, to where they still felt comfortable defensively. So, I mean, again, the way that it played out was not what we expected, but I can see the logic behind it. I don't think it was grasping at straws, that's for sure. No.
I think it was more, I think it's, but for the fans, it's a head scratcher, because I mean, you just don't know. This is the explanation. These are the parts that you and I and our other coworkers at 24/7 were kind of discussing, like, they're going to have a co-defensive coordinator type defensive backs coach. Because I will say Mike Zordich's position was defensive backs coach. But if we asked him about a safety in interviews, he'd say, I don't coach the safeties really. So I think this will be a little different. I do think Clinkscale is going to be involved in both positions. I think Bellamy is going to be involved in a few different positions. I would think, I mean, he's qualified to be. So you're right. I when they made the hire, it was best available, but you were also looking at a situation where
I think it was best of that. I'm like, cause you're right that what I'm trying to look at it from a hindsight position and say, this is why I think it played out that way. Cause yes, logic would say, why would you lose your most at that point, wasn't Jean Marie the most experienced and the oldest coach on staff? Why would you replace your linebackers coach? Why would you do it that way? Why not bring in another defensive mind to help out a first year coordinator with no play calling experience? Why would you? So my thought is, because they went that, I'm just trying to explain what I think was the logic behind that move, you know? Yeah. And obviously that happened before the Klinkscale hire, which Klinkscale now is the most experienced assistant on the defensive side by a long shot, as far as the college game goes. So that's all I was trying to do. I'm not making an excuse for the hire. Just, I remember thinking at the time, why did they do it this, like, why? Cause I had the first thought initially, but the gist of it felt like a, you know, best player available type thing. That's sort of like, we can get this guy. We have to take advantage of the opportunity to bring this guy because he'll make the staff better from top to bottom than other guys that we're looking at on either side of the ball. That's about as good as I can put it.
Yep. It was the optics. And that's where, you know, you and I kind of discussed a little bit more than the optics. There are a couple optical head scratchers, and that's where I can see the more negative fan, or the fan who is more frustrated, I should say, calling it grasping at straws. But I think you and I are in agreement that, by and large, solid hires for Michigan. I mean, you know, think about some of these coaches. I mean, these were guys that Michigan fans have been really wanting, you know, and not like saying that after they were hired. I mean, these were, in Klinkscale, I don't know how many times we got questions about, why doesn't Michigan hire this guy? Or you, Mike Hart, why doesn't Michigan hire him? So, I think it was a little bit more than grasping at straws, but we're going to take a quick break in just a moment. We got a few more questions. They're on the quicker end, less discussion points, more answering your questions, emptying that mailbag. This is the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
And we're back. Thanks for waiting. So, keeping it in the same kind of tone of discussing the tenor around the program, Joshua Kidd asked, what stage of grief, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance best describes the majority of Michigan football fandom going into 2021? I think we're past the denial. I think that was maybe last, or maybe the spring before. I think anger was last year. I don't know if there's bargaining in college football. I'm not sure. I think Michigan fans are in the depression stage, Steve. I mean, when I look at my stories or kind of the comments on my football stories, I think there are some people who are accepting, but I think a lot of it's just people who are really bummed out and don't want to read about it. And so, you and I, as we mentioned, we both are in pretty frequent communication with Michigan fans, either on social media or in real life. Have you been around a Michigan football season that was like this in terms of a lot of fans are checking out or saying, they're kind of scaling back how much time they consume thinking about Michigan football right now. Granted, the events of the last 15 months, both with Michigan football, but also with everyone's personal lives. There's a lot of other things that people are excited to pay attention to right now. But yeah, what stage of grief do you think Michigan fans are in? Generally speaking,
apathy is kind of the word yep. that comes to my mind as far as where this offseason's at from a fan standpoint, right? From the coach, that's what we talked about beforehand. We're at the Ferris State camp, and obviously have to preface it by saying I don't think more energy means that Michigan will necessarily win more games this season. But I definitely felt like Harbaugh and the staff as a whole, things felt a little bit different than the last time. Granted, it's been a while since we've seen them. And I know it's also there's excitement because it's really the first time that there's been a camp where they can evaluate prospects in person. So there's excitement there. But in talking to Harbaugh, Sam and I hung out in the gym for a while with Angelique from the Detroit News. Didn't know if we'd even get Harbaugh, but we did. We got him for longer than we thought we would. Much more jovial and outgoing than I remember him being the last couple times we'd seen him. Even after the cameras were turned off, he stuck around and talked to us for, it was a short time, but still, more than what we're usually getting. So I think from the coaching, I think from the actual program standpoint, it's not apathy. It's not defeatist.
Right.
I do think it's a little bit different than probably a lot different than it is heading into last season, COVID or no COVID. Huh. But from a fan standpoint, absolutely. It's apathy. Excitement's obviously gone. We're seeing college football. There's no such thing as parity. And one of the biggest outliers is Michigan's chief rival, who's does not look to be slowing down anytime soon. So, from a fan standpoint, yeah, I think apathy has fully set in, and it's really it's a mix of apathy and it's time to show me something, or it won't even be apathy. Right. So,
right.
That's the way I would gauge it right now, I think, is mostly apathy, but also all right, prove it or I'm done. So
the term basketball school gets thrown around a lot. And it's often in terms of Michigan, it's often used when Michigan basketball does something really well. It's also used kind of when football struggle, they'll be like, oh, Michigan fans will be like, oh yeah, it's a basketball school now. This is the first spring that I've actually felt there's truth to it. Even when Michigan basketball was making the national title game in 2018 and, 20, it was still a football school. The basketball was the dessert that you liked a lot more than the meal. I can say the stories I write about Michigan basketball right now, by and large, do better numbers wise than the stories I write about Michigan football. And so I think there's definitely apathy. I do think once the summer kind of comes to an end and there's fall camp, but there's a little bit more signs of, returning to tailgating, returning to games. Cause that is a big part of it, is that football, so much of Michigan fans' love for Michigan football, many of them, it's because they have fond memories of being there. Michigan basketball is a little bit more, and college basketball in general is a little bit more of a TV sport. Michigan football averages almost 10 times the attendance per game than Michigan basketball. And obviously the tailgating atmosphere, people aren't dropping 4 or 5 figures on, the parking tailgating experience. And so, we'll see how it changes as the season gets closer. I think a lot of fans are just kind of done with being duped, because you mentioned the energy felt different I have heard that literally every single year since I started doing this job.
That's
fair. The energy's different.
That's fair, but I think you and I talked explicitly last year. I don't know if it was on the pod or maybe even off about Harbaugh specifically feeling defeated during the pressers and post game and stuff.
Not before the season though. Not before the season.
True.
Before the season, I mean, I remember I covered him at the Let Us Play protest. I don't know what it was actually called. You know, his energy was high and in pressers in the, you know, he met with us in the middle of July for a press conference and seemed really energetic. So I think Michigan fans, I mean, apathy, despondence. I don't think it's quite to acceptance and indifference yet to that question. I think some fans will say they will, but unless they're literally not watching, you know, because how many times, Steve, this happens with the Lions all the time. How many times do you hear, yeah, I'm done with them. I'm not watching them anymore. Not until they, you know, do this. And then next thing you know, they're watching. And so I don't think it's to that point yet. I think it's actually very hard to get to that point, especially in college sports, because a lot of people have personal connections to the programs they root for. So I don't know if it's there yet, but I do think this offseason's different because I think the frustration has changed to, I guess, a more passive frustration where you're like, whatever, like, you know, let me have my summer. So we'll see how it develops. I do think, you know, Michigan for a long time was like a 12-month a year, care about the football program kind of fan base. I think until they get back on a winning track, I don't think that they are that. So that would be my assessment of the grief. Kind of a fun question. I mean, it is funny. I'll talk to Michigan fans and they'll be like, I haven't even thought about Michigan football yet. I'm like, yeah, you're not alone. I've noticed.
So I think the one thing though, the my school is a blank school, like insert sport here. That's just always like, you just, whatever major sport is doing best. Like, that's just what people say. You know, it's like if Michigan's a basketball school.
Yeah
it's just because the basketball program is in a much better spot right now than the football program. You know,
nobody at Indiana is saying they're a football school though.
Yet.
I think you can do
Michigan's.
I think sometimes it's cover.
Okay. Michigan basketball.
If it happens for like a decade straight.
Okay. Sure. Michigan basketball though has sustained their success now for a while. Indiana football.
Right.
They're starting to turn it around, you know. There's a whole different deal though in Indiana with just the history of basketball, period. Not just at Indiana University, but the state of Indiana too. Yep. Where it's a little bit different. But when I hear Michigan fans say Michigan is a basketball school, I always, 99 times out of 100, I feel like it's actually reinforces the idea that it is a football school, because people want to tell you it's a basketball school as a way to slight how the football program is currently performing. Because that's what it always feels like when like people go out of their way to say, well, Michigan's a basketball school now. Like they're like in a way where it's like, well, football stinks and I want to complain about it. And I'm not giving people crap because there's been plenty to complain about. Don't get me wrong. I just feel like this slightly over the top argument, because you're right. We see it and we're seeing it more now than we have. It's more of a, you know, still kind of an underhanded swipe at the lack of success, lack of relative success the football program has had. I'd be interested to see if people agree with what I'm getting at there, but I feel pretty good about it. Cause I feel like, you know, if football was winning 10 or 11 games, even if Juwan Howard won a national title, you know, say Michigan split 4 years with Ohio State, won a Big Ten title, whatever, people wouldn't be crowing as much about Michigan quote being a basketball school as they would with football struggling and basketball having a nice sustained run of success, both on the court and on the recruiting trail.
So I was 100% in agreement with you until about 2 months ago or 3 months ago. because I always thought it was just kind of a lazy joke. I think it's kind of an old joke too. It's been going on for 8 years, not just at Michigan, at every school. Florida State loves to do it too. Texas did it a little bit this year, you know, and whenever UNC does well at football, it's like, oh, it's a football school now. It happens all over the country. It's not like that particularly inspiring of a joke, but I think this off season or this winter and spring, there was absolutely a shift, because when people would claim it in 2018, or, you know, coming off the 2017 football season and the basketball team made the title game, fans still were much more engaged with football. They were much more interested in the football stories and the basketball stories that off season, you know, around now. That is not the case this year. And so of course, if Michigan football becomes really good, they're going to have more fans show up at the season opener than Michigan basketball will get the entire regular season. So in some sense, it's still a football school, but I literally don't get questions about the football team anymore. People read my stories, but not nearly at the same numbers that it is about the basketball program. So I think you're right. I think it's often a cover that fans use or a joke or a bit, you know, Indiana, but I think Michigan since 2010, it's not even close who the better program has been. We're talking very seriously about Michigan potentially having its fourth coach since 2010 in football. And the two coaches that they've had in basketball have like 95%, 99% approval ratings. So yeah, it's, I think if it happens long enough, I do think there can be a shift. It doesn't happen very often. I mean, I'm sure Michigan State a few decades ago kind of made a shift. I think, it happens from time to time, but yeah, I think it's, as far as the actual question, I think that it's kind of in the apathy, depression stage where people just don't want to talk about it. They kind of want to ignore it. So, other questions, maybe maybe they'll bum Michigan fans out a little bit less. Kansas pregame asks, has Jim Harbaugh ever visited Hayes, Kansas prior to this week? So he's got in-laws in Kansas. We were talking about this before the show, but Hayes, Kansas, I didn't even realize he had visited there. That is true middle of nowhere.
Kansas.
Not a dig at Hayes. It's smack dab in the middle. And we were joking. We looked at like the map of the United States. It's when it shifts from green to tan.
Yeah.
So it's not even like the lush, you know, forest, grassy kind of Great Plains. It's like, it's not quite mountains either. It's really like middle America.
I feel like I don't know if I-80, does I-80 run through the middle? It's like, I feel like that's where that trip starts to get really boring. Like, it's cool for a while when things open up. You know, when you're taking a trip, you can see for miles and miles, but then it just gets like, then it's just a trek. You know, because I remember it's I-70, because I've taken I-70, drove to California a long time ago. And yeah, like Eastern Colorado, Western Kansas is is pretty brutal. And that's it. You're right. I mean, it is like legitimately right on the edge, you know, because the trip down 35, like through the Kansas Turnpike, you know, Kansas always gets a rep as being like a really boring, kind of like, you know, how people always joke like Iowa and stuff, like Nebraska.
Yeah.
Like there are spots of Kansas, like the Turnpike is actually a really nice drive. But yeah, I mean, I also, like I said before the show, props to Kansas pregame for being totally on brand, asking the question about Harbaugh ever being in Hayes, Kansas before. I have to assume he has been. Maybe not since he's been the head coach at Michigan. By the way, for those wondering, he was there to check in on Jaron Kanak, who's a national recruit. I think we just bumped him up to a 4-star. He ran like a 10
some outrageous 100 yard dash, and he's gotten like 30 offers in like a month's time. He officially visited Michigan last week. Fort Hays State had a satellite camp type deal the next day after he got home from his official, and Michigan went right back out there to go check on him again and you know, do the whole thing with him. So that's why he was out there. I have to assume he's been there at some point. I thought that was kind of a neat, goofy question. And like I said, I appreciate the just totally on brand from Kansas pregame to ask that. But ironic, though, because like you said, Harbaugh has a lot of ties in that area. Was he rumored to be a candidate for Kansas's head coaching job at one point? I feel like back in the day, way back in the day.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I don't remember if it was post Stanford or post. It must have been post Stanford. You'd have to look it up, but there were like, and it sounded like looking back that it was like semi-legit because of those family ties in the area. So kind of a little tidbit, but
yeah, and that's how they came across Ronnie Bell. I don't actually know if Bell is officially from Kansas or Missouri, but he was the Kansas City Player of the Year. Harbaugh's in-laws are kind of based in the Kansas City area. And so Ronnie Bell didn't have any scholarship offers and was named Kansas City Player of the Year, which is just crazy to me. I mean, obviously, I know he was like kind of basketball was his first sport, but still, Harbaugh got the tip and it worked out pretty well. Jared Kanak ran a 10.37. Man, you almost wonder if it's even worth playing football at that point. You might as well
205 go. At 205 pounds too. Not a small, skinny wide receiver. Yeah. This kid's gonna play linebacker. So
gosh, that I'd almost tell him to go do track and make a nice living there. But you know, to each their own, and you're right, if he's already 200 pounds, it might be a pretty bright future for him. Another question we got just comes from Jacob Smith. Says, based on the tape you've seen, can Alan Bowman compete for game reps this year? So I just checked this morning. Alan Bowman is officially enrolled at the University of Michigan. That's always, especially at Michigan, but I would argue at every school, that's always the question is someone can commit as a transfer, but until they're actually enrolled, it does kind of get taken, or there's always that potential that maybe they enroll somewhere else instead. But Bowman is enrolled at Michigan. I assume he has made it to campus since it is June. I sure think he can. I mean, I know Michigan kind of anointed Cade McNamara the starter this spring, and maybe that, you know, that was with Bowman in mind, but Bowman wasn't on campus. I don't know. I was pretty intrigued by the Bowman commitment. That was another out of nowhere commitment. I don't think anyone even knew Michigan had offered, to be frank. And so, but he, I don't think he got a fair shake at Texas Tech. You know, I think he started out really impressively. I mean, he was at Oklahoma, you know, with a punctured lung, scoring a touchdown to give them a lead at halftime. You know, I think at one point he was actually leading the country in passing yards. And then he has the punctured lung is not nothing. I think he injured it, re-injured it, kind of coming back from it a little soon. And then Cliff Kingsbury knows a thing or two about quarterbacking. He left to go be, well, I guess, did he get fired from Texas Tech? Anyway, he's now the Arizona Cardinals head coach. But he left. The new coach came in. You know, Bowman had a couple other injuries, and they brought in a transfer from the new coach's old school. I can't remember where he was from, but basically they never really, I don't know if Bowman ever really got a true fair shake after Kingsbury left. He's a tough player, tough quarterback. You know, kind of the Texas gunslinger of, you know, he fits that mold, not just from being from Grapevine, Texas, but also playing like it too. So I think so, especially considering Cade McNamara and JJ McCarthy and Dan Villari have a combined, what, one start? It'd be one thing if McNamara played 5-6 games last season, but he didn't. The season ended early, and I believe he got injured pretty badly in that Penn State game. So we didn't even really get to see him in a second true high leverage situation. We really just saw him against Rutgers. So I think Alan Bowman can compete. What do you think, Steve?
I think he can compete. I wouldn't predict him. Right.
Yeah. I think my depth chart's got Cade still winning just because he's been with the program a little longer.
Right. And I think the benefit of enrolling early, you know, I think McCarthy will also, I don't think that's over as far as when fall camp hits. Well, that's half the benefit of enrolling early. I don't necessarily think with a high school prospect outside of the rare, rare, rare ones, is a kid going to walk on campus in January and in March, you know, seize the job necessarily. But I think you give him an extra 4 or 5 months.
Right.
That's a long time. That's like double the time that he was more than double the time that he was there.
True.
When he first competed in the spring. So you give him a little bit more time. I don't think that's over yet. And if you're Michigan, you don't want it to be over as highly as they spoke of McNamara. And as much as I tend to believe what they've said about McNamara, I don't think it's over with JJ. And then Bowman just is another name in the mix there who, yeah, absolutely will compete. Just wouldn't be the guy I'll predict to be under center against Western Michigan.
Yeah. A lot of people ask kind of which kind of transfer quarterback is this? Is this Shea Patterson? Is this Jake Rudock? Is this John O'Korn? I see a little bit more Rudock. I think, you know, he graduated. He's a little bit older. He's not, I guess, naive. I don't think he's expecting anything to be handed to him. And I think he's kind of here to bet on himself. And if it doesn't work out, then he's got a really good education, you know, in terms of grad school. So, so we'll have to see. Plenty of snaps to be had for all three. Curious to see how Michigan divides it, because obviously you're limited in time and snaps you can conduct in practice. So, you know, do they truly make it even across the board, or do they kind of start to whittle that down early to prepare for a season? Because they're playing Washington in week two. It's not like they have the whole month of September to you know get their feet wet. Another question from Jacob. How much stock do you put into players receiving praise this year? I'll have to pull up the full wording of it. But you guys have mentioned previously how last year the staff would sing the praises of guys who then had rough years. How much credence are you giving to any hype praise that the coaches report this summer? Steve, totally fine if you have a different approach. I put zero stock into players receiving praise. If they can justify it and say such and such is up 15 pounds, or if they can have some sort of quantifiable or measurable, maybe I'll listen. But after last season, I mean, Jim Harbaugh is talking about they want to go win a national title. You know, they want to go win a Big Ten title. And of course he has to say that, but really just seemed like the coaches were a little hyperbolic, felt like they were a little out of their shoes. And then it looked good against Minnesota, and then it didn't the rest of the way. And clearly wasn't even a top 25 team. So probably had more work to be done than the coaches admitted or ever mentioned. So I'm sitting out the praise train this year. You know, I'll report it because that's my job, but in terms of like actually it changing my expectations, I think any expectation changing will have to occur September 5th or later. I without a spring game, without an open practice, I'm going to wait until I see it on the field before I change anything. Have you changed your approach this off season?
So until last year, you know, Michigan was having good, not great seasons. I wish I'd write it down, like of which guys, Because, I mean, if you listen to enough pressers, like, most guys are going to get some mention at some point, right? But there's always, like, I don't know, like a handful of guys or so that you continually hear about or whatever. And until last season, I feel like more often than not, the individual players that the coaches would continually point out, or players in their pressers, the guys, that handful of guys, more often than not would be good or would produce. And people would extrapolate us maybe doing an insider or about like somebody tearing it up in practice as meaning, you know, 11-1, like would extrapolate it into team success. So if there's any hype about how they feel the team will perform, I would probably take that with a grain of salt, but I still usually, I'll at least listen if there's a consistent buzz or discussion about an individual player that is standing out, whether it be in spring ball, during off-season workouts, or in the fall. I'll at least listen, because there's still, and again, last year being the exception, until then it was usually not 100% hit rate for sure, but more often than not, that was usually a decent indication that there was an individual that was on the verge of, you know, not maybe a full-on breakout, but a guy that was going to produce and be a positive contributor for them that given season. So yeah, from a macro standpoint, definitely a grain of salt. I don't expect any coach or player to make any grand predictions or anything about the overall team performance. But when it comes to individuals, like I said, I think I'll at least be listening to see who or what is being said and to take into account that, like, if we were to, just example, if we were to hear good things about AJ Henning, that to me, I don't read that as AJ Henning will have 194 yards and 3 touchdown catches against Ohio State and Michigan will win that game. Look at it as, okay, how did AJ Henning do last year? Okay, he's probably going to do more than he did last year, and maybe they have a guy that can actually be a really good player for them. So that's kind of the way I always take it. And I'll listen on, like I said, I'll listen on individual players, but from a team standpoint, yeah, I'll take anything if anybody goes public, which I don't expect, with a grain of salt for sure.
Yeah, and some of it will depend on the context. I mean, AJ Henning, I think, is a very good example. If there started to be a lot of buzz about him, I might buy into that, because if you watch his high school film, he looks like someone who's going to, you know, take a step forward. It's more of a when, not an if. You know, I'd say the same thing about, you know, David Ajabo and like a maybe Zach Zinter. There's actually already been a lot of positive buzz about Zach Zinter. I mean, he's another guy that just, you know, there's reason to believe that it's true, even if it's not true to the extent that Michigan says. Maybe it's true, broadly speaking. You know, I think guys who were really high profile recruits, like if all of a sudden we hear Donovan Edwards is this amazing running back, well, maybe he is, because he was a 5-star. I mean, it's not out of the question. And so some of it will be context. Some of it will be contexted with what is being said in general. I mean, if a coach is straight up saying this guy's going to be, you know, whether it's publicly or kind of through the sources, this guy's going to be an All-American, he's probably going to be pretty good. Maybe he doesn't become an All-American, but people don't say that about someone who's going to be like so-so. Or at least I guess Don Brown did a couple times last year, so I can't say they don't do that, but generally speaking, they don't.
Don Brown was the ultimate, like, take the good and the bad, I suppose. He was the best assistant to talk to, because I thought he'd give the most insightful answers.
But it faded.
But it did have a tendency to, if there was one assistant on staff who maybe had a tendency to overblow the potential impact of an individual player, it was definitely him, right? So that's, I think he's probably who a lot of people think about when they think of the whole,
right,
should we listen to what anybody has to say?
Last spring, last May, he said he was worried about Vincent Gray leaving early to go pro. And he said that Josh Ross and Cam Megrone are the best inside linebacker duo in the country. Obviously, neither were even close to true. So, yeah, I mean, and he wasn't the only one. I think other coaches were. It's natural for coaches to be excited about their players. And so I think the context and kind of the overall big picture, I mean, if they're touting a guy who has never played at a position or like switched positions and is new there, if they're touting a guy because he was directly asked about that player, if it's someone who we pretty much had all penciled in as backups, it's a guy that really no one had heard from for 2 or 3 years. I think all of that can be with a grain of salt. If it's a former top 100 recruit who was largely expected to be a contributor sooner or soon, then maybe you can take, I mean, you know, Nico Collins, I think was a perfect example he was someone that everyone expected to be really good. They actually burned his red shirt, which surprised a few people. And then the next fall or next August, it's like, oh man, he's really taken over that receiver's room. Well, it turns out he did. You know, Josh Uche, I think before the 2018 season was very much like, oh yeah, he's a beast. He's going to be a monster. And he didn't produce in the Notre Dame game and everyone lost their minds, but then he actually led the team in sacks that year. So yeah, I think there's plenty of reasons or examples where it's been true. I don't know if I ever like really took the bait a ton either. I would always kind of write it and be like, we'll see. But I am listening less to the praise and more to the why. I'm just curious to see how they put this thing together. Because some position groups I think are in really good shape. I think some things Michigan will be able to do really well. But I think if there was a theme to this entire podcast, Michigan football's got a lot to prove. Lot to prove, lot to work on as they begin their summer workouts, I assume, next week. I don't actually know their official time schedule, but for the freshmen, all the 2021 freshmen are now enrolled at Michigan. I believe they're all on campus, you know, for the summer classes and summer training. So inching closer to the football season, whether all the fans like it or not. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Throw us a rating. Tell your friends if you like it. Feel free to listen to our recruiting podcast as well as our basketball podcast throughout the summer. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. We'll talk to you next time.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.